Gunta Vista. It's a bonus episode. You paid $5 a month, so this is why you get your entry ticket to the 2023 Gunta Vista Cruise. You are here on the Grand Princess with me and my ex-husband, ocean scientist Jesse Black. And boy, do we have a sore tummy. I've spent the last 2 hours at the all-you-can-eat shrimp buffet, and I have not been washing my hands. Me and my ex-husband are here keeping it together for the kids, our horrible sons, Bonathan and Garrett, who are here annoying the fuck out of you. I'm ushering you over, inviting you to come and sit with us and enjoy a pina colada, which is not included in your cruise ship entry price. The cover band is about to start, and they are exclusively playing acoustic covers of 2000s R&B hits. Hi, Jesse. Welcome to the Gunta Vista Cruise.
Bonathan, get down from Bonathan. It's not on. What do you guys say? It's not on.
It's not on. Yeah, it's Bonathan. Not on. It's not on.
What was the
a
other?
Bit of shush, please, Garrett.
Oh, that was. I was trying to think of that phrase. I was explaining to someone. It's not on. Like another American, and I was trying to think of the other thing that that your teachers would say to
bit of shush, please.
Can I get a bit of shush, please? Is that good?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
People kind of just say, kind of just humble brag. People in America think my Australian accent is like phenomenal.
They would.
People in Australia, I think, realistically, they think it's fine.
Because I think yours is like a 5 out of 10, but like the standard American doing an Australian accent is like it's like a 1 or a 2, unless you're Ryan Jordan Alvarez, who's sensational at it. He's amazing.
Yeah. Most Americans, I feel like, have a really bad one for Australian.
Yeah, they just don't get it. It's just not happening. It's not me, though. Yeah, not you. You're nailing it. Anyway.
Sorry, was did you ask me a question, too? I'm sorry.
I don't remember. No, I don't think so. You just were here on the cruise ship, and that is a timely reference to the Grand Princess, who just had an outbreak of gastroenteritis and COVID at the same time.
God.
Cruise ships are crazy.
God. I don't think I could go on anymore. There?
No, I don't think I could either.
Have you ever been on one?
No, I was talking about it the other day because Hobart's always got like cruise ships docked. And the other day there was like the big fucking, there's a big Mickey Mouse boat. There's a big Disney cruise ship docked in there. And so we're looking it up and we're talking about people who, you know, go on there without their kids. But I don't know if I could do it. You've been on one when you're a child, yeah?
Yeah, I went to one tourism. I guess it's all tourism, but it was to Mexico, some islands off Mexico, and it was not Disney affiliated, and it was pretty cool. But I was also like 10, and then there was free ice cream. I think I would be insanely bored if I was an adult. And then there's like the layer on top of it of like, now I know they're like really bad for the environment and stuff. And
there's that, and all the gastroenteritis and the E. coli and the salmonella, whatever.
And we saw a stand-up comedian that was not very good. My dad really didn't like. It was very funny how much he didn't like the stand-up
comedian. This cruise comedian.
Also, they make you have dinner with like another family or something.
Oh.
Are you aware of that?
No, you have to sit with somebody else.
Yeah, and I don't remember anything about them other than the fact that we didn't like, I think, the people that were assigned to our table. It was, like, awkward or something. So we kept, like, avoiding the dinner that you're supposed to go to. And it has, like, this weird, awkward layer over the whole situation because you'd see them around the boat and be like, oh, hey, you missed.
You're the dinner family.
You and your husband and your sons missed dinner last night. Didn't see you there. And it's just a person you've never met before. And you're like, I'm just trying to fucking.
Oh, God. I mean, that's probably, that's for the polyamory, right? Like, that's for the swinging. That's why they do that.
Sure. Yeah.
I assume so. You're assigned swinger partners.
Yeah, that's probably why they had us put the keys in a bowl or whatever.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know why we bring our keys to them. I'm thinking of a Disney cruise, though, for you. Like, I'm thinking of things, I know you pretty well. In terms of things that would drive you absolutely batshit crazy, I'm pretty sure it would be a cruise ship with Disney adults for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
In adding on the layer of gastroenteritis or any other kind of.
So you're just on that disease. Cruise and like Goofy's there.
Is he just water? Like, is it, have, what's
is
the
Goofy
Disney
just
angle
hanging
of that?
Out? I don't know. There must be like characters or performances.
Right.
And if
like
you've been
Wars
on a
thing.
Disney cruise, please write in. I would absolutely love to hear about it. Particularly if you went without children.
Yeah,
Anyway, we're here to talk about fish, maybe?
Yeah, so here's what's up. I'm going to be real with you. I tried to find a like kind of silly disaster, which is a stupid thing to say, I realize, but like a goofy mishap to share with you about like river stuff. Like pretty harmless, you know, everyone has fun. And I ended up stumbling upon a story of like one of the worst things, one of the worst disasters I've ever read about.
Before we get started, does it involve animals of any kind?
No.
All right. Never mind. Continue.
Did you have a different one?
No. I'm running the ship here, and I've got all the stingers in front of me, and I'm like, oh, I'm ready. You know, I can't focus on what you're saying because I'm ready. I'm waiting to hit them stingers.
Oh shit! Is there any?
But you know, I don't have boat watch. If we're talking about boats,
You don't have boat watch. There,
gonna have to put that in a post.
Okay,
that is something Ben will do or not do.
It is definitely a boat. Well, we're going to get that to that later, actually. So here's the rest of my problem here. As I discovered that, I was like, well, I don't necessarily just want to be like, hey, welcome back, it's Jesse. Here's something fucking horrible during like time that's already pretty bad, obviously, in the fucking news. Everything's really upsetting and shit sucks and it's horrible. So I was like, okay, here's what I'll do. I collected a few things that are nice and goofy. Up front at the park.
Hell yeah. You brought that goofy content?
I brought some goofy stuff, some nice things that might make you feel good. And then I'm going to do a hard tone pivot because I think the story is actually fascinating of the really fucked up thing. And if you're not interested in that, it's not much worse than the other ship disasters I've talked about on here. But it's, you know, people are dying. It sucks. It's not good. But it is like a fascinating in terms of like a horrible failure of human beings and their failure to have basic decency and responsibility for one another. But I thought I'd start with the fun stuff first in case people are like, I'm not down for that.
Hit me with that goofy shit.
Lucy, did you know that according to some recent studies in this article from Science Alert, fish sing with the dawn chorus like birds?
No, they don't.
They do.
No, they don't.
Fish on coral reefs have been observed.
With singing. The dawn chorus.
Can you click? Are you on my Google Doc here? If you'd like to click on some of these links,
I'm going
to click on that link to hear it.
Ben to perhaps put this in there somewhere.
Yes. I can add it to you. Send it as show notes too. There's a lot of links to like science articles with like videos where you can hear strange fish clicking noises. They're not quite bird like, I'll say. But they do sing to each other with the dawn chorus, and they make little like kind of noises.
They make a strange sound. I'm not sure that I like it. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Think of it
I don't
this
like
way,
that.
What if maybe if you're underwater, it sounds like, and you're fish, it sounds like fire as hell. Like it's like.
Oh, you think that under the water, it just like sounds like dope as hell. Just sounds like shit because it's like traveling through water. Totally.
Yes, even though the camera is also underwater, so that doesn't make sense. But if imagine if it was, you heard it, and it was basically like Steve Aoki dubstep drop level type. Oh, shit.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's my follow-up question is, what's the funniest possible type of song that they could sing? If you're
I was
like
just thinking
diving?
That. Like if you went scuba diving and you're seeing fish Steve Aoki like dropping like some straight fire, what is he dropping?
Oh God, I'm trying to think of like how a fish would have like a little, what's the turntables or whatever with the fins, but it really wouldn't work underwater. And also this, he's not really singing. I picked someone who doesn't really sing, right? I don't know why I said Steve Aoki.
Yeah, why'd you do that? I think it, I all right, they're singing. They're not DJing. That's no. Stupid what you've just said. It's an insane thing that you've just said.
I'm really sorry, you guys. This, you know, it's just freaking,
I think they're singing musical
like a barbershop
theater.
Quartet type thing. Would that be funny?
Yes, but only if, like, it's not just a fish. It's a fish and three different sea creatures.
Oh, sure. Like a crab going, yeah, like, so I'm picturing doing like the baseline crab. Or whatever.
Yeah, crab doing the baseline, fish
don't
singing.
Birds already do that, though? Not in real life, I mean, but in, like, cartoons and stuff, they have birds. I think there's birds doing barbershop quartet stuff.
Yeah, 100%.
Is there another type of, like, group band, like a K-pop?
I think fish are like, what's it called? The Linkin Park rap guy.
Oh, Fort Minor?
Fort Minor. I think the fish are singing Fort Minor jams.
100% reason to remember the fish.
Yeah, that they're singing Remember the Name by Fort 10% Minor.
10% fins, 20% scales.
Yep.
Oh, 15% concentrated power of whales. That's something.
That's why you're here. That's why you're the comedy guy.
I'm sorry. I didn't know you had Weird Al booked tonight.
Oh, yeah. So that's okay, it. So the fish sing with the Dawn Chorus. Is there more?
Yeah, does that make you feel good or generally? I thought that was uplifting to me and made me kind of emotional. But
no, I think that makes me feel like bad inside horrifying. My stomach. So they have to sing with it. How do they know that it's the Dawn?
The fish know?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, these are like reef fish, so it gets light. You know, they know that. Fish are keenly aware of the solar cycle. Actually, a lot of fish are even aware of the lunar cycle as well.
So, wow.
Yeah, that's like, you know, that's actually kind of offensive. A fish to you would be like, oh, how does a human know it's morning time? Like, that's basically what you just said.
I'm talking down on fish. I don't think they know shit. You look at a groper, he doesn't know anything. He has no knowledge of the universe. He has never seen the stars.
That is so funny you say that.
Yeah?
Because in my next note, there's a few anecdotes we have about groupers. One, they can be actually quite affectionate to divers. There's like anecdotes of divers going down and seeing the same grouper come over and for belly like, scratches.
Seen that little video where the groper is like annoying this guy when he's trying to hammer something down there? That's cute.
Yes, they're very precious. Also, I learned that in your country, their common name is kind of maybe offensive.
What's the common name?
Well, I've gone and highlighted it below. If you can, I don't know if it's
what does
so
that
the
mean
origin. Yeah, so the origin is either, I looked into this, and the origin is either, it's been, there's like equally plausible theories on the origin of this name that range from like not offensive really, like a coincidence or even, to the most offensive thing you have ever heard.
Would you like to rate it out?
Listen, apparently in the American Fisheries Societies, I think have moved away from this name, or it was like, I saw some blog articles that are like, should we move away from the name, from calling these fish, they've called them the Jew fish. So I don't know.
Not only that, I'm reading, why. I'm reading that an Atlantic Goliath grouper is a black Jew fish.
Yeah, that's what we call it. Not the first thing is what we call it. You guys, I think, have called it the other set of things that you've called it. Sorry. And so Jew fish would be like a term for grouper, I think. And then there's different types of grouper. So that's why you have like black and then, so yeah, gotcha. You see how you run into some problems here.
Yeah, no, I'm not too sure about that one.
But in America, we don't, we call them something nice. Like we call them groupers. But apparently they make a grunting call that the scientists on this article compare to the buzzer from the Operation Board game. You've played that game.
That's very specific. Okay.
So they basically tell you if you've hit the funny bone and stuff. And then there's a quote here. It says the softer ba 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 is a chorus being made by batfish, which are also known to be a very affectionate fish.
Right. So like the batfish is dropping the chorus.
Ba 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 ba.
Jewfish is making like Timbaland.
Grouper,
like,
yeah. Do you want to do this like acapella pentatonic style?
Yeah, not really. Maybe not.
Batfish? No, nothing makes me angrier than acapella and beatboxing.
Me too. Acapella flies me into a rage I can't describe. There's something about acapella that it hits something bad inside of my ears.
You know, people are always like, I hear people chewing and it makes me so angry I could like throttle them.
Yeah, that
I don't
too.
Think I get that, but I get that for beatboxing and acapella.
Yeah.
So I loved Pitch Perfect 2, 1, 2, and 3. Oh man. I just remembered the next. Okay. I think you like this too. So I basically what I did is I Googled like nice things, fish, affectionate fish, most affectionate crustacean, like some things that are like positive, right?
You're just Googling like affectionate fish.
I was down bad after the thing we're going to listen to or hear about the next one. And I was like, I got to bring something to the table here that is like at least a 2 on the positivity scale. But what I ended up finding is a strangely erotically charged description of the mating of blue crabs.
Okay.
Would you like me to read it? Or would you like to read it? It's a couple paragraphs. I can highlight it.
Let me have a read here.
Okay. Do you see where it starts when it says when a female blue crab is ready to meet her match?
Yes.
Okay. You can pretty much go down all the way until that end of that deal.
Alrighty. When a female blue crab is ready to meet her match, she releases pheromones, which act as a silent mating call to signal possible suitors. Not just any gentleman caller will do. Dr. J. Suk Chung, an endocrinologist and expert on crab reproduction, the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Sciences Institute of Marine and Environmental Technology, said the female is looking for a big crab that would be more likely to provide her with more sperm than a smaller crab. That crab is so much bigger than my boyfriend.
Looking for a big Chad crab.
Chad crab. There's much at stake for the female in her choice. The female blue crab must molt to become soft enough to mate. Ugh. And unlike a male, can only shed once in her life.
Sorry, quick brief interlude. Do you know what that means, to molt?
Like to shed the shell?
Right. Yeah, so basically to grow, they have to like, they have this hard exoskeleton. They have to basically like crack out of that, and then they secrete a new shell on top of that to become like bigger. And that also applies to like, you know, it's basically the equivalent of taking off your pseudo armor to access your genitals, essentially.
Yeah.
But apparently she can only do this once in her life, is what that says.
Wow, I didn't even catch that the first time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry, please continue.
As part of his pre-mating ritual, he stands upright on his legs to look tall, spreads his claws, called chelae?
Sure. I don't even know either.
Spreads his claws out 180 degrees to look bigger and fans his swimming legs to show his movement. It isn't about appearance, it's the movement, Chung said. When he grabs her, it is so abrupt and quick that it can look like an attack. My heart freezes, Chung said of this moment. But how he grabs her, he doesn't hurt her. He never breaks her somehow. Jesus. He guards and protects her until she molts in front of him. Then he moves over her and they mate. His hold helps him protect his mate at her most vulnerable moment. He will neglect food to stay with her until her shell hardens again in 2 to 3 days. Wow.
Ladies,
you're not even getting a text back, you know?
Yeah, better yet, him staying with you while neglecting food while your shell hardens in 2 to 3 days.
Wow, that's really beautiful.
That would be crazy. If that had to happen for us to like mate and stuff, for like, well, I'm gonna be vulnerable and soft for 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, but what if like you just met that crab? You just like he just did his little crab dance and he made his claws look really big, and now you got to stay with that guy for like 2 to 3 days.
Well, did you see him fan his swimming legs to show his movement though? That was crazy.
He did fan his swimming legs to show his movement. So, crab's got to be a Chad crab. He's got to be large.
A chab.
He's also got to be soft, though.
Mm. Indeed. Mm. Isn't that something?
That is something.
Isn't that something?
I don't know if crabs feel vulnerability, like spiritually. Like, I feel like we're assigning a lot of meanings, like holding her at her most vulnerable to
her. Her most vulnerable
feelings
moment.
That I'm not sure that a crab has.
To be fair, it is her most vulnerable moment.
It is. Like,
she
technically.
She might have some sense that my freaking shell is gone. Like, you know, I'm like all squishy and stuff. Can you imagine if your skin was like liquidy for like 3 days and it was like
until it like hardens again. If you walked into a corner
wrong, you'd like puncture yourself.
I mean, I guess it's like when babies are born and their like head's all soft, right? And then you got to like not touch their head.
Yeah, it freaks me out. They have like their skull bones are like fusing together or something.
That's fucked up. That seems like a, I don't know. It seems like an evolutionary flaw. Yeah, they shouldn't have a soft head.
Yeah, it seems like the number one place I would put stuff to be hard.
I want
hard.
That shit like hard.
Armor.
Yeah, I want that skull. Solid. Yeah. Well,
damn, that's like terrifying to think about it. Like to have a child and you got to like watch. They have literally have like weak points like a video game enemy. Like yeah. Critical hit point. I guess everybody has
the baby's critical hit point. It's patella.
It's terrifying like, out there.
Technically. I just realized I never played the Stinger. I got to do it. I'm doing it. Okay. We're in the middle of this. It's like the ocean is a part of nature.
Yep. Country roads take me home to the place I belong. Into this love, nature corner, rubber crabs, sit my dick.
Nice. That felt
protected
good.
Protected me at my most vulnerable moment.
Felt powerful. What else we got? I'm seeing the words affectionate grouper written on this document.
Oh, yeah, if you click on that, it's just a video of a guy petting a grouper.
Oh.
Which is very nice.
All right. And this is a podcast. Yeah. This is an audio medium.
Yeah, sorry. So I just, if you just, again, Google like the I term, mentioned.
Right. Affectionate grouper fish wants love from his scuba diver friend.
Yeah, again, if you just, it turns out if you just Google like affectionate fish, love fish, nice crustaceans, yeah, stuff like that, you'll find
like,
some shit.
Love fish loving, touching fish.
Fish loving.
Yeah,
did you,
you
see
can
the
find
picture
all
above
kinds of nice stuff.
That link there of the,
no,
which the listener can't see?
No,
that is
I didn't.
A batfish. That's what, you can't see that?
No, I mean, I didn't look.
What the
batfish.
Fuck?
What's a batfish?
They are very affectionate and curious, and they will come up to divers and inspect them, which I think is very cute.
Oh, that's a wide fish, a bat fish.
It is. There's actually two different types of bat fish. One of them looks like an absolute freak.
He's girthy.
So if you just Google bat fish, you'll find like one version that lives on the seafloor. It's like a benthic fish, meaning it's kind of hangs out on the seafloor, and it has like big old red lips, like a cartoon.
Oh, the red-lipped batfish here.
Yes.
Betty Boop batfish. She,
I guess Betty Boop
for real.
Is black and white, but, you know. Yeah, that fish is very strange. The other type of batfish, like a reef batfish, those are the very affectionate ones. I cannot speak to the affectionateness of the other one.
She kind of nice with it, you know?
Do you think?
Just swimming around in the ocean like that. A little red lipstick on.
Well,
disgusting.
Here's where I meant to ask you, Lucy, as we reflect on this and what I've told you, isn't it beautiful to live in a world where we can find these displays of joy and affection and compassion and, dare I say, even love in such humble beings as the crab and the fish?
It is.
Who are we, I mean, to say, as humans, to say that only our lives have inner substance and worth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Could we even imagine such a world where species of all kinds could join together in chorus and greet the new day with song? And could we as humans in turn be stewards of these threads of compassion that we see embedded in the fabric of the web of life?
You're straight spitting right now.
I'm just going from the top of the dome here, to be honest. I didn't think it was that. No, that's like the end of the really nice part of the podcast. So now it turns into the really fucked up part. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's my segue. So if you wanted to put like a little stinger here.
Oh, yeah, of, put on the...
a big fart or something, I don't know.
Yeah, just... All right, I'll leave that. Ben? Yep.
There it is. Okay, so we're going to talk about... When I Googled, like, river ship foul-up, basically, I stumbled across this story, which was... I'm actually amazed I had not heard of this. This is a disaster that occurred to a ship called the P.S. General Slocum, which is named after a... Yep. Listen, it's a guy's name. It was named after a Civil War guy, Henry Warner Slocum.
Henry Slocum of the Civil War.
Of the Civil War, yes. That's a funny way to of the Civil War. Yes, that's him. This was a side wheel passenger steamboat built in Brooklyn, New York in 1891. Lucy, if you scroll down, I'll try to have this in the show notes so you can see it. But you can also just Google like a steamboat, old timey 1891.
Yeah, if you picture an old timey steamboat in your mind palace, you got it. You got the slow come right there.
Yep. Yeah, so it's a big ass ship. It's like, you know, you see this picture we have here. It looks like quite large, but it's even larger than you might think. It can hold 1,000+ people. And it turns out it had a kind of few issues before the really bad disaster that we're going to talk about. What ends up happening to this ship is the worst maritime disaster of the 20th century until the Titanic, which actually just surpassed it like a few years later in 1912. Okay. So we're going to talk about what happens in 1904. But it is still, I think, if I'm confirming this. Oh, okay. So it was the most deadly man-made disaster in New York until 9/11.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Yeah, it's long gone. And we're going to get down into kind of the structure of this ship. It's pre-Titanic, so it's mostly wooden paneling and stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Titanic was like a steel-hulled situation, completely impervious, as we know, to any sort of...
Icebreaker. You
know, ice, yeah. Yeah. It was unsinkable, I think.
Yeah.
We'll be reading more about that. But, and so you have like a lot of wooden stuff on this boat. And this is a passenger boat. So this is something that you can buy a ticket basically, and it'll take you from different parts of New York City on the East River and some other rivers, I think. And there's kind of a cross section of society that would be taking this boat. So there's like a few really, really rich people on mm-hmm. this boat and like the nicer areas that are going to their like a resort beach in maybe New Jersey or something. There's also like kind of middle class folks and working class people from German neighborhoods in New York City that maybe they're like saving up most of the year to like take a trip on ferry with the family to go to beaches and do vacation-y stuff. And there's also like, you know, the lower class people that like service the boat and work on the boat, and there's people in the engine rooms and all that stuff. So it's kind of like Titanic in that way, right? It's like a little, almost like a little village of a cross section of society. Here's where we get into some problems. There's something called a lamp room in the boat, which is a storeroom that the ship was using for oil, specifically for lamps, lanterns. This was how like most shit was like lit back then, was gas lamps. Things are powered with gas.
What could go wrong?
Open flames around, and the unfortunate thing about a wooden ship, you know, you think of wood in water for a long time, it gets all like gross and rotted, right? Avert this, they would hose down the ship with, I think it was a combination of turpentine and linseed oil,
Jesus,
I believe, which is like which is like really good for like water, I think, waterproofing the ship and keeping it from rotting, but also
yeah, you gotta oil them decks, right?
Yeah, and it like basically soaks into the entire wood of the ship. So I'm reading this book called, oh my god, I can't find the name of it right now because it's an audio book and it's in my freaking phone. No, wait, I'm gonna find it. So I was basically cleaning my fridge. Side note, I was cleaning my fridge today in preparation for this episode. I was listening to this audiobook on 1.5x speed about this incident called Ship Ablaze by Edward T. O'Donnell. It's pretty good so far. It's
okay.
There's a few parts where it's a little, I don't know. But anyways, the point is the author described this ship as basically one giant Duraflame log because of this oil seeping into it. Do you guys know what Duraflame logs are?
No, but I'm assuming it's something like a boat soaked with turpentine.
Which, yeah, fair enough. In America, we light our fireplaces often with you put like wood in there, right? And you have one log that's like soaked with whatever fucking chemicals and shit that are flammable. So it basically acts like a big ass candle, I think.
Oh, right.
It like basically it's just flammable ass piece of wood is essentially the thing.
What if the whole boat was made with that?
Yeah, pretty much a lot of the boat is made from that. But before the big disaster we talk about, it has a few incidents 4 months after the ship launched. And again, this is a huge ship, so it can carry like 1,000+ people, 2,000 people. But it did run aground off of Rockaway, and they had to get some tugboats to yank it free, which is not good. on July 29th, where they actually had like 5,000 passengers that time, so they can have quite a few people in here. They hit a sandbar with enough force that, quote, her electrical generator went out. And then the next month, General Slocum again ran aground off Coney Island during a storm. And during this, it had passengers had to be transferred to another ship.
Gotta stop so running aground.
Yeah, you gotta really stop doing that.
These seem like pretty normal things, though. You know, you're just running aground. Sure. Not the end of the world.
No, and they're able to fix the ship, and I don't think there's many casualties, if any, for those disasters. Something interesting I was reading about or listening to in this book was, like, a lot of the people going vacationing to see the beach in that era were wearing, like basically, they're, especially the wealthier ones, they're dressed to, like, attend a wedding, basically. Like, you would wear a suit to the beach. And, like, the women would wear, like, nice dresses. Yeah, because you would like, wouldn't quite go in it, I guess. It's, like, wasn't really the era of bathing suits yet.
I guess so. Or you've got that bathing suit that's, like, a leotard that, like, covers your whole body, right?
Right. Yes. A fucked up and
old-timey men leotard.
Yeah, I was reading in this book, there's, like, a diary entry from a woman who just got married. And all of her young friends, she was like 19 or something, all of her young single friends were going separately on this boat to this, on the specific trip we're going to talk about, to like have fun and hang out and swim in the beach. But she had just gotten married. So she was now officially a newlywed. And so she was expected to like stay with the other married ladies in like her husband's family and stuff too, because her husband couldn't be there. Because she like, it was not proper to,
you know, let her hang out with this single girlies with the girls.
Yeah, particularly if the new husband was not around. So you have to hang with the moms basically, which is interesting. Like, I don't know, weird vibe to,
that's a weird vibe
about now.
Yeah.
But okay, now we're going to get into the even less cool part, but basically what we have is a ton of people. It's an early morning, trip. The ship is going underway with about 1,300 people on it. It is
so many people, right? Like,
I know, right?
That seems like a lot for an old ship.
Yeah, it's really long and it's really flat too. Mm. There's a few decks as well, though, too. So there's like an upper deck where the rich people are, and then you know, kind of a Titanic situation, like a proto Titanic, though it's not quite as large. But on the specific day in 1904, I think it was June 15th, yeah. So you have this thing called the Lamp Room, and as this boat is passing East 90th Street, somehow some sort of fire gets started in or near the Lamp Room. Quoting from the Wikipedia here, the fire was possibly started by a discarded cigarette or match, and the fire was fueled by straw, oily rags, and lamp oil strewn about the room. So,
oh my god,
it is the Lamp Room. You are going to have some lamp oil.
People are probably just smoking wherever here. I guess it's also helpful. Yeah,
people were absolutely just pounding darts.
They were punching darts.
Punching darts. okay, so here's where things, you might be like upset by some of the things in the story. Here's where it's going to veer into like the, I'm going to get kind of angry part. Mm. The first notice of a fire was at 10 a.m. Eyewitnesses claimed the initial blaze began in various locations, including a paint locker filled with flammable liquids and a cabin filled with gasoline. Passengers on the main deck were aware of the fire at the entrance to Hell Gate, which was a area of the river they were coincidentally passing by, which is
I wouldn't call it that personally.
Yeah, in hindsight, not good. The captain of the ship, which is Captain Von Schaik, it's a cool name.
Nice.
He was not notified until 10 minutes after the fire was discovered, and a 12-year-old boy supposedly had tried to warn him earlier somehow, which I don't know. I'm imagining like a little boy going like, "Hey, mister, there's a fire down there."
Yeah, he's a little 1900s little boy saying, "Hey, mister."
But he was not believed.
Of course he wasn't. Can't believe kids. What else has he lied about the day before,
freaking,
you know?
Kid. So that kind of delayed the captain's response to the fire. But upon figuring out, oh shit, this thing's actually for real on fire, the captain, his move at this point, and to his credit, this is a difficult situation because these things are not very maneuverable. They're a fucking steamship from 1904. And you have to think quite quickly to like where you can take this thing.
Yeah, right.
It's basically going to turn into like a flaming, slow moving behemoth within minutes. Cause this thing again is like very flammable. he is looking at the river, like, topography, the bottom topography, basically, and he's thinking about beaching it on another sandbar or something, or basically grinding it to a halt somewhere soft that people can get off.
He's Sully right now.
He's literally trying to Sully really hard. And
he's trying to Sully.
You have to acknowledge that. The problem is a lot of people back then cannot swim. Like, they do not know how to swim, especially
the beach unless you've got your full body leotard. You don't know how to swim.
Yeah, you're wearing your zoot suit. Is that something?
Your funny little swimming cap.
My swimming cap and my swimming cane.
Mm.
But basically, he realizes he's too far along the river to beach the thing in an area where the water's really shallow, which is where he wants people to be able to bail. So if they can bail, they can actually, like, live. They won't just sink into the river, right? But he realizes he's too far along the river to do that, and the ship is still moving. So what he decides to do is direct the ship to go full speed ahead for like at least a couple minutes to beach the ship on an island farther up called North Brother Island. Now, the problem is that the ship, the way it works, it has all these like intake valves on the deck so that air can get in from the outside and go into the just ventilate the ship with fresh air. And of course, the engine room needs oxygen for the like combustion to happen, right? Like,
and oxygen puts out fires, right?
Well, Lucy, I feel like you might have one crucial element there swapped out. But he basically is like, okay, we got to go full speed ahead. And he, I don't know how it works, but he does like the pedal to the metal thing going forward, which unfortunately just basically the increased wind is now sucked in and starts making this fire going
fire
from
vortex.
It's described as an octopus of flames on the deck.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's like, the flames are actually finding gaps between like the walls and shit. It's very creepy to think about. Like, it's almost like following the oxygen or whatever, and it is basically shooting out of the these areas of the ship. People understandably start freaking the fuck out because the thing is on fire and they're in the middle of the river still. Following the last command, the captain is like, go full speed ahead, jam this thing onto this island up there. I'm going to go to the hurricane deck and wait here until the water is shallow enough and jump off.
Mm-hmm.
Which, do you know anything about, do you know any common like phrases in terms of like captains and what they should be doing
with the ship going down? Nothing comes to mind.
Me neither. I was just thinking,
I feel like that's
the
like number one captain rule. It's like the one thing I know about being a captain.
All right, so here's, again, this is going to make, this made me a little angry. This made me a little steamed up. I'm going to quote again from the Wikipedia article, which I know is stupid, but whatever. You know what, whatever. Quote, although the captain was ultimately responsible for the safety of the passengers, the owners of the ship had made no effort to maintain or replace the ship's safety equipment. The main deck was equipped with a standpipe connected to a steam pump, but the fire hose attached to the forward end of the standpipe was in 100 feet length of cheap unlined linen that had been allowed to rot and bust in several places.
Oh my God.
When the crew tried to put out the fire, they were unable to attach a rubber hose because the coupling of the linen hose remained attached to the standpipe. Basically, this hose is fucked. Fire hose doesn't work because nobody looked at it for. The ship was also equipped with hand pumps and buckets, but they were not used during the disaster because the crew gave up firefighting after the hose shit didn't work out and everyone started panicking. Perhaps relatedly, the crew had not practiced a fire drill that year, which is not good. You're supposed to do that very frequently.
Yeah.
And all of the lifeboats were tied up and inaccessible. And apparently this is disputed, but in the book, they describe how people were trying to get to these lifeboats that were tied up. And they're normally tied up, right, with like line, and you untie that so it falls in the water, you can get in. But they were also wired to the ship, apparently, some people say, because someone had gotten annoyed at the clanking noise that they were making as they bumped up against the hull. So they wired it with wires.
Just decorative lifeboats.
Yeah, and even worse than that, because people are like, there are a lot of people in this boat and they're panicking and they're doing like the crowd pushing thing to get off because they don't want to burn to death, understandably. And it's quite disturbing because they're trying to unlock these lifeboats and they're pulling at wires and they're like, their hands are coming away just bloody because they can't actually get the fucking lifeboats off of the ship. Unfortunately, it gets worse. Survivors also reported, quote, that the, so there's a bunch of life preservers around the ship. They're like, right. You know, they're strapping the ceiling sometimes. They're in lockers and shit. They should be everywhere. And in fact, when you get on a ship or any type of ship, they should tell you where they are. They should give you, in fact, a whole drill about putting them on and knowing what they do, and making sure they work every, you know, whatever the expiration date. They all have like a very clear expiration date on them of like, these need to be checked, et cetera, et cetera. Those are everywhere, all over the ship. Unfortunately, they had not been checked in a very long time, and survivors reported that the life preservers were, quote, useless and fell apart in their hands, while desperate mothers placed life jackets on their children and tossed them in the water, only to watch in horror as their children sank instead of floating. Most of the on board were women and children who, like most Americans at the time, could not swim, and victims found that their heavy wool clothing absorbed water and weighed them down. Now, that's very bad. It's going to get actually quite a bit worse, too. It was discovered that the Nonpareil Cork Works, the supplier of the cork materials to manufacture those life preservers, placed 8 ounces of iron bars inside the cork materials to meet the minimum content requirements at the time.
What do you mean?
Unfortunately, it is exactly what it sounds like. Nonpareil's deception was revealed by some company, Dave Conwellers and Sons, who inspected a shipment of 300 cork blocks. Many of the life preservers have been filled with cheap and less effective granulated cork and brought up to the proper weight by the inclusion of iron weights.
Oh my God.
Yes. Canvas covers rotted with age, split and scattered the powdered cork. Managers of the company, Nonpareil Cork Works, were indicted after this, but not convicted. The life preservers on this boat had been manufactured in 1891 and had hung above the deck unprotected from elements for 13 years.
So it's just a whole cocktail of people doing the wrong thing here.
Yes.
Like manufacturers, the captain, whoever was meant to check those.
Mm-hmm.
The guys who decided to put iron in the life preservers.
I'm so mystified by that. I guess the scam is to they have to be some minimum weight of some quality of cork.
Of cork, probably. But they're like, you know,
they're like, oh, fuck,
are these things really going to be used? And if they're used, well, the guy who's using it's going to be dead. So he can't fucking sue us.
Fuck him. Yeah. The book was describing how
the perfect crime.
Yeah. When the cork in the shitty life jackets like crumbled up, it soaks up more water and just becomes like dirt and actually makes you heavier. It's like 20 additional pounds on you. So basically, you're putting on something that makes it harder to swim when you already cannot fucking swim. To avoid a fiery death, which is fucking terrible. It's awful. And you mentioned the person who was supposed to inspect these things. Would you believe that this person, Inspector Lundberg, had found all these issues upon inspection and within the year and actually looked the other way?
Yeah, he'd seen them. Okay.
Because inspectors at the time were paid on the basis of how many inspections they were doing. So my man was moving quickly. He was cutting corners.
Oh,
he was hustling.
Helpful.
He was grinding.
He's on his grind, even back then in the 1900s.
He did not ask to test the fire hoses in their most recent test, which was, I think, that year or at least a year before. And he wrote that, or he signed off on the phrase that the fire hoses were deemed good condition. He even knew that the lifeboats were wired up or tied up too much, and it was like, hey, you guys should fix that or something.
Next time I see you, I want that fixed.
There are stories of people, and I'm sorry this is upsetting, but people trying to choose between like, am I going to die from burning to death as this flame approaches me, or am I going to just jump off and probably drown, which is horrible. And there's people with
I'm picking
kids.
Water probably
this?
Right, you picking water.
I'm inhaling
that flame, maybe, because then I'm out.
I think I gotta go with the thing is, like, I can swim okay well. I don't know, because I feel like I would be like, okay, maybe I have a chance if I swim.
That's true. You don't have a chance.
Perhaps if you have no idea how to swim, I don't. Are you just, like, fucked? I don't know. Do you know how to swim?
Not particularly well. Like,
are you going
fire here? Vaguely how to. Maybe I'm inhaling some smoke and passing out.
Oh, you're yeah. I mean, that's I'm drinking a whole bottle of whatever behind the bar and just
yeah,
going crazy with it. There was a story in the book of a woman who survived actually and was like I think she could swim and she was trying to jump off to get off the boat and she found that she couldn't and it was because her hand was stuck to a hand railing that had been painted and the paint was melted. It had fused her skin to the railing basically.
Oh my God.
And she had to make like the conscious decision to just go like, sorry, this is gross, but rip that thing off, leaving behind what was called quite a bit of skin and jumping off to survive.
That's some really detailed stories from here, huh?
Yeah. And I think I like this book, but it's a little, I know this is like an insane fucked up story, but some of the prose is a little goofy because like in that section the author's like, upon jumping off she left behind a good chunk of skin and dashed her dreams of becoming a concert pianist. Like, I mean, okay, I understand, don't know if that's not her, good.
I don't know if she's really thinking about that at the time.
That's kind of how I felt too. I was like, I don't know,
concert pianist career.
Yeah, it's like my concerto or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, it's a really horrible story by only made possible by extreme negligence on multiple
levels.
It's
great how many stories like this are in history. Like this is the same as the Boeing Max disaster. It's like the same story.
Yes. It's just like layers just of people fucking later. Up and looking the other way.
Yeah. And people getting paid to do things quickly and stuff like that. So it's good that we... Good thing about history is that we can learn from it.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is like they seem to just have been like, oh, we'll never need those, even though they've had some issues. Like, you know, they didn't have anything that was
surely
that crazy.
There was like boat accidents a lot more frequently back then, right? Like,
yes, all the time. Absolutely. Yeah. There's in 1898 they had a collision when they collided with a boat called the Amelia, which was carrying what, and I can't find any more information on this. Maybe I haven't reached this part of the book, but. This book they hit was described as carrying 900 intoxicated anarchists from Paterson, New Jersey. What the fuck does that mean?
That's such a great description. 900 intoxicated anarchists.
And wow. Some of those passengers started a riot on board, as true to form, and tried to take control of the vessel. And the crew fought back and took control of the ship.
Why did you put anarchists on your boat? You're asking for trouble.
Yeah, I mean, how'd they even agree to get on there together? I think they'd be friggin'... Okay, so here's the aftermath from the New York Historical Society Museum and Library. Quote, Captain William Henry... Oh, wait, I should say before we talk about any of these fucking losers we're going to talk about, I think... Let me make sure the figure's right, because I think people deserve dignity in terms of getting the numbers right of their deaths. An estimated 1,021 people of the 1,342 people died on board.
Okay.
Fucking crazy.
Oof.
Yeah. In the aftermath, Captain William Henry Van Schaik and Frank Barnaby, the president of the, I forgot to mention the name of the steamboat company, is the Knickerbocker Steam Company. So I don't like saying that. I don't.
Yeah,
I
with that,
hate this
that
whole story, dude.
Hard R with your accent doesn't hit the ear right.
Yes. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I'm trying to.
Knickerbocker.
Thank you. I'm trying to enunciate that as hard as possible because fucking naming shit. They just named shit whatever back then. Just cut it out. A parade of witnesses came forth to testify that the life preservers on the vessel had fallen apart. And indeed, cork dust had clotted the hair of victims pulled from the water. The coroner in courts accused steamboat inspector Henry Lundberg of negligence because he had certified the ship as, quote, safe a month before. Testimony made clear that inspectors were not expected to probe deeply, particularly since they were paid per inspection. What could possibly go wrong there?
Mm-hmm.
Why had the captain avoided beaching the ship on mud flats nearby rather than North Brother Island? How were Frank Barnaby's records falsified, the owner, to show that he had purchased new life preservers? Interesting.
Probably pretty easy to falsify a record back then. It's just like a piece of
writing
paper
thing. Yeah,
that you wrote on.
Writing
it.
On this. This happened. Ink. Date, signature.
Yeah.
The ship's company president managed to maneuver to escape responsibility. Despite damning eyewitness accounts, a sensational trial ultimately acquitted the company and the steamship inspector, Lundberg, while the captain, Van Schaik, was sentenced to 10 years in prison.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, a lot of his crew actually would come forward and be like, he was used as a scapegoat, essentially.
It sounds like it.
Unfortunately, which I'm not saying he did a fucking great job, but it's obviously a case of like, I mean, the president of the company got out of the legal headway, and so did the inspector. Like, come on.
Just scapegoating this guy.
Yeah. In 1910, a congressional report condemned the Slocum's lax federal inspection, the untrained crew, and the faulty life-saving equipment for the large loss of life. As a result, shipboard safety was improved, although not quickly and widely enough, judging by the huge death toll of the Titanic only 8 years later. The disaster did mark the twilight of wooden passenger boats, since the alarmed public shifted its allegiance to less flammable steel-hulled vessels.
Yeah, like I'm probably keen on the less flammable boat myself.
Yeah, are you interested in going on my cool steel boat known as the Titanic 2?
All steel, baby.
there's a movie, Titanic 2. It's not very good.
Sorry, there's a movie called Titanic 2.
Yeah. I think it might have, I might be hallucinating. I think it might have like Christian Slater in it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm Googling this immediately. How can you have a Titanic 2? This boat sank.
Well, they made another one, I think. Oh, no. I think it's like a modern, yep.
There it is, 15% Rotten Tomatoes.
So it's good.
Don't know any of the actors in that.
There's no Christian Slater? Okay, no, maybe there's something else.
Funny looking guy.
Is that Christian's now?
I don't know.
Sorry.
Yep.
The captain, Van Schaik, was sentenced to 10 years in prison. He spent 3 years and 6 months at Sing Sing prison before he was paroled he was paroled first, and then he was pardoned by President Taft in 1911.
Oh, hell yeah. Taft. I don't know if he's a good president. He's probably bad.
I knew he was very large and had a custom-made bathtub to accommodate his largeness.
Well,
yes, that is like the common. I swear to God, if you ask any American what they know about Taft,
that's what you know about Taft. He had a big bathtub. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Love that. And definitely no one else knows more about that. The neighborhood of Little Germany, which was primarily the people on this boat had come from there, mm-hmm. had been in decline for some time as the disaster. The neighborhood of Little Germany, which had been in decline for some time before the disaster as residents moved uptown, had almost disappeared afterward with the trauma and arguments that followed the tragedy and the loss of many prominent settlers, mostly Lutheran Germans.
Wow.
Yeah. And there is That's a crazy. Marble memorial fountain currently erected in Tompkins Park Square that has the inscription, "They are Earth's purest children, young and fair." And finally, the sunken remains of the General Slocum were salvaged and converted into a 625 gross register ton barge named Maryland, which itself then sank in the South River in 1909. And again, in the Atlantic Ocean, east coast of New Jersey, during a storm while carrying a cargo of coal, all four people aboard survived that sinking.
Okay.
That's all I have.
All right.
There's a picture as well above, if you've seen it's like a wood carving painting of what it looked like when shit was going down on that boat. And it looks fucked up.
It looks very bad. The boat's on fire and there's some shitty little tugboats coming to save the day, maybe?
Right, yeah, it looks like some tugboats and some guys with sticks sticking them in the water to...
Everybody's dying.
Yeah, you could just die in really fucked up ways on a steamboat back then.
Yeah. If I was going on that boat, I'd be thinking all of the fucked up ways that I could die. And I'd probably just stay on land. You know?
You think so?
I think back then I probably would have just stuck to my boring land life, personally.
Would you go on a free cruise right now? Like a free Disney cruise, all things included.
Like maybe. I'm curious about it. Would you get seasick on there?
On a cruise ship? They're usually so big that I think it's like the wave action is pretty much negligible unless you're in some like crazy seas. But honestly, when I was on the cruise ship, I didn't even notice the waves at all because it's so big. No, I think you'd be fine. I think some people probably have issue with it, but it's very mild the bigger ship you get.
Right. You just end up vomiting from all the diseases that spread around.
Yeah, I think that would be my main concern, is that, and like, what's the movie with Tom Hanks doing the other disaster, not Sully?
Captain Phillips?
Is that just what he does now? Tom Cruise is just like, fucked up thing happened? Is there a guy involved? I'll be him.
Tom Hanks, you mean?
Yeah. Did I say Tom Cruise?
You did say Tom Cruise.
Oh my God, dude.
Idiot. That's really embarrassing. Everyone's going to be laughing at you.
That's like the third time that's happened today.
I had never heard of that boat before. That's a crazy disaster.
I know. I was
also focused on the Titanic.
Yeah. And the Titanic 2.
Yeah. We're also focused on Titanic 2. We don't take a second to think about the general slow come.
Isn't that crazy, though, that if, like, this is Mormon, I guess, but you, like, have relatives that die in this horrible boat disaster, and then they immediately get upstaged by a crazier boat disaster, like, 4 years later.
Yeah, that kind of sucks, actually, and everyone's talking about the Titanic.
Yeah, you remember the other fucking 9 boats that this happened to? You guys can we maybe get some life preservers? We figure out how to have some life preservers on a boat that work? Is that maybe something we could do?
Lord. Just pumping them full of iron. Oh.
How do you do that ethically and not just like immediately have a moment of clarity and walk into the ocean? Like, oh, let's just put some friggin' iron in there.
Just make it heavier. It's fine. Just pump it full of iron.
Just putting farts in all of my products to kill people. Shut up. I'm pissed off this week, Lucy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I brought this jar. That's all right. I enjoyed myself. Well. Thank you for...
Did you know that fish sing in the dawn? They sing so loud.
Did you know that fish sing with the dawn?
And do you know what they're saying?
Do you know what they're saying?
Stop hurting each other, please. Please stop.
10% luck, 20% skill.
Name a single other song that has that guy in it right now. I dare you.
Ah, yep.
Where'd you go? I miss you so. Seems like it's been forever. You remember that one?
Nope.
You've been gone. Okay.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you for joining me, Jesse. Thank you for bringing this to my attention.
It's 50% Jesse, 50% Lucy.
You're the a cappella act on the cruise ship right now. You understand that? You're a cappella stand-up comedy.
Oh, my God, dude. I'd rather friggin' walk into the propeller.
What you're going to be hearing as this Bunta Vista Cruise 2023 goes down. I am the captain and I'll be bailing. I'm out of here. I'm not interested. I don't take my job very seriously. Right, you're going down with the ship. Is there anywhere our listeners can find you, Jesse?
Oh, yeah. So I do a more depressing podcast called Sludgefest with my dear friend and fellow Australian. Well, like your fellow Australian. I'm not Australian. Her name's Shannon. And we do this podcast called Sludgefest about environmental disasters and like colonial and capitalistic disasters and shit. Basically like the story that we described here, more of a macrocosm stuff. But we just recently did a really cool episode where we interviewed Dr. Julia Morris, who wrote a book on refugee processing in the island of Nauru that your country did. Saying that, like, my America is, like, so nice to our, like, refugees and stuff is silly. But, she wrote this book, Asylum and Extraction in the Republic of Nauru, that it was, like, really, really good. We had a cool discussion about it. You can find that on Spotify or patreon.com/sludgefest. I guess I'm still on Twitter at Jesse Black SCI. This shit sucks on there. I don't know, man.
Yeah, shit sucks.
Yeah. But thank you for having me, Lucy. It's always great to speak with you.
No worries. Have a good week.
You too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay frosty out there.
In the Call of Duty. Okay, Captain Price.
Oh, yeah, a little Call of Duty reference there. Did you like that? Do you like that coming out of your mouth?
Switching to your pistol is always faster than reloading.
All right, bye.
Bye.